Hello, greetings from the cesspool from beautiful Miami, Florida. The cesspool, Ale, do you feel like we're in a cesspool right now?
Well, I smelled something that smelled vaguely like human feces, and then I realized that there was a cesspool.
It was a very, he seemed like somewhat antisocial and male adapted Long Island Jew, and he was sitting there, but he worked at the Nature Center, and I said, It smells like someone took a shit back here, and he said it's quite likely the cesspool behind you. But it's funny because it wasn't even actually a cesspool; it was just like a fucking
it was
ditch.
A little creek.
It was a well. I think he was pointing
at. You gotta get closer to the mic right there.
To the mic
right there. Yeah, because this is just the lapel mic.
I think he was pointing to the septic tank. It's like a septic tank,
like someone shit. That's like a latrine, like you shit, and then it gets filtered out to a fucking.
It's like a poop tank underground. If you don't have clay plumbing pipes like the beautiful city of Chicago, it goes to a septic tank.
Well, anyway, I don't know about the nuances of the cesspool, but welcome to another episode of The Crime Pays But Botany Doesn't Podcast. I'm here with Lily Bird and Ale Scorch, and we're talking about everything South Florida. And what a greetings from the fucking ecological wreckage of South Florida. Do you want to? What does it feel like being here? Everyone, both you, tell them what it sounds like. I got to look at something over here.
I guess to be honest, it feels like the suburbs on steroids in the jungle.
Yeah, it's a hellscape of strip malls and pavement, basically.
They told me it was going to be like this too. I mean, it's not all of Florida,
but this area,
but South Florida especially, yeah. Like where you do a lot of your work in North Florida, you got a lot more.
Yeah,
space.
A lot less people.
And a lot less habitat that's been so thoroughly degraded. But
yeah.
It's fucking nuts, though. I mean, there's really, they didn't leave anything. I mean, there's like little crumbs.
Not of the high, dry areas, which were like the really unique ecosystems. The pine rocklands, those were the first to go. And the scrub.
Uh-huh.
Easiest to build on. The
yeah,
driest,
dry.
Where you want to live.
And so those dry microsites, that's the coolest stuff. So like we went to Dickinson. What was it? Dickinson or Dickinson?
Jonathan Dickinson.
Not like Major Dickinson's blend. Who the fuck was Major Dickinson, the Pete's Coffee blend?
They
that shit is like crap.
That
will fucking do lines of Major Dickinson.
It's some Trader Joe's type stuff where they just made it up, you know?
What?
Like the Major Dickinson?
Oh, yeah. No, he was probably a real guy. Anyway, this guy Dickinson was some prick who gave the native people here a bunch of fucking epidemics. What did he give them, smallpox or some shit?
I have no idea.
Dickinson was an epidemic. Why the fuck? Why do you name a park after some dude who's been dead for 400 years,
who
too?
Accidentally crashed his ship there.
Yeah, nice going, Jan. What was his name?
Jonathan Dickinson.
Yeah, nice going, Jan. But he's commemorated. They should have named it Scrub Jay because there were a lot of Scrub Jay. Scrub Jay Park.
Or Sandpine Scrub.
Oh, my God. Yeah. What a lovely fucking habitat, though.
It is
beautiful,
gorgeous.
Stuff.
It was so nice.
An hour north of Fort Lauderdale. But it's cool. So, but there's a couple different main habitat types down where we are. We're in Miami, which is 2 hours south of Dickinson, and you get kind of the swampy stuff that's regularly inundated, and then you get the higher, dry, like bare rock,
exposed limestone, yeah.
Young limestone too. Man, I'm normally used to working with like Cretaceous limestone. This shit's only like 3 million years old at most.
Young limestone.
Young limestone.
So fresh and nubile.
That's terrible. So fresh and nubile.
I'm feeling very offended by what you've said.
Don't check my hard drive. But so what are some of the species? Let's talk about this. Some of the species. Because have you done much botany here? You mostly do North Florida stuff,
right? I mostly do North Florida. So I am like, I've only gotten the chance to botanize down here, you know, a handful of times. But yeah, so I know a little bit.
Well, first off, why don't you tell everybody what you do? You know what you're what you're rocking with. What you got? They got you your own car. The Native Plant Society
no, that's
does.
My car.
That's
just,
your car.
They just bought me magnets.
You just decked it out. I need some shit like that. Yeah. You know, it's a tax write off thing. You doing that for tax write off, or what do you do that for?
No, I didn't.
You could do it for tax write off. Have you tried to write off the vehicle?
No, I haven't. No.
You got to get like a quasi criminal tax guy.
Yeah.
Like I got. I'm just kidding. So, go ahead.
So yeah, my middle name is Bird, Lily Bird, and then my last name is Anderson Messick, and it's Anderson-Messick because my parents were extra. And I am the director of North Florida Programs for the Florida Native Plant Society. And so we only have 3 employees at the Florida Native Plant Society. I'm the only one in North Florida, so by default, I'm the director of North Florida
Programs. Do you got any New York Jews or Italians?
Not many.
That are boisterous and loud.
Just these two.
Florida Native Plant Society?
I mean, there are a couple.
Is it mostly geriatrics, though? Or? There's nothing wrong with being old, man. I'm going to be there soon.
Mostly boomers, Yeah,
you got any zoomers? You got any of these young kids with the septum rings and the blue hair and shit?
There are more young kids coming out, and that makes me really excited, and that is one of my passions, is trying to pull more young people into the Native Plant Society to be mentored by these older people who are established in their field and have tons of knowledge and skills and connections.
Got to wrangle these kids in.
And are willing to give of their knowledge freely, to someone who is interested to hear it.
You know what my concern is? Is that the younger generation is not going to be fucking turned up enough. They're not going to be like wingnut enough. They're so like watered down.
Oh, you don't hang out with enough of them.
Do you think that's true? Is this the first generation to be more stiff than...
There are so many that are just like thrilled as hell to be out.
No, but I know. But I mean, they got to be like turned, because you got to have the pizzazz. You got to be.
They're not neurotic enough.
I just like fucking weirdos and wingnuts who are like extroverted and don't give a fuck.
Plenty of them in Gen Z.
So they're fine. The kids are all right.
I've been really impressed with a lot of the young volunteers that come out with me, who are just emotionally mature and super excited and interested in plants.
Are they using it as an antidote to the death cult? Because there's a lot of death cult down
here. I mean, I think they see what's going on and they aren't fucking happy because, our future, we're at the age where it's like we probably will eke by without seeing, the terrible collapse. But, their future is much more in the
they have more future than we do, is what you're saying.
Yeah, that's old fucks.
Yeah, I don't know. It really does. I mean, just driving around here, it feels so bad to be just stuck in a car endlessly. It's like I was thinking that day we were sitting in traffic driving to the site. I was like, fuck, this should be the postcard. Like just a picture of bumper to bumper traffic. Welcome to Miami. Welcome to South Florida.
Yeah.
With some like exhaust heat haze.
Yes.
Out.
It just kills the soul. It's just something just feels so... Because it's that single-use mentality. Like, this landscape is just meant to hold the retail spots, and you pay for the shit you buy at the retail spots by working a job that sucks and doesn't pay you enough.
Yeah.
There's no, like, hope of...
And I think the younger generation has seen that, and I think that the taste, they've gotten a taste of what the real world is like, as in the real world connected to nature.
The real world, right.
Yeah, our world, and... it is the antidote for the stress and the burden of living in this era.
Don't forget the despair.
The despair.
I gotta play that George Carlin clip right now where he's talking about the coast to coast shopping mall. Because when I saw that changed my fucking. I mean, it didn't change anything, but I was like, oh my god, this guy just put the words everything I'm feeling.
The world needs George Carlin. I miss him every day, man. He's so insightful, hilarious.
Let me see if
people are fucking dumb. You can say what you want about this country, and I love this place. I love the freedoms we used to have. I love it. I love that.
This is like 2002. He did this. His famous piece.
It didn't take a fucking catastrophe to get us to care for one another. I love the fact that we're on camera all the time from all angles. But you know what? You can say what you want about America. And I say, I love this place. I wouldn't have it any other way. Wouldn't live in any other time in history in any other place. But say what you want about America, land of the free, home of the brave. We got some dumbass motherfuckers floating around this country. Dumbass motherfuckers. Now, obviously, that doesn't include this audience. I understand that. You seem intelligent and perceptive, but the rest of them, holy jumping fucking shitballs. Dumber than a second coat of paint. And this ain't just ranting and raving. This ain't just blowing off steam. I got a little evidence to support my claim. It just seems to me, that only a really low IQ population could have taken this beautiful continent, this magnificent American landscape that we inherited. Well, actually, we stole it from the Mexicans and the Indians, but hey, it was nice when we stole it. It looked pretty good. It was pristine. Paradise. Have you seen it lately? Have you taken a good look at it lately? It's fucking embarrassing. Only a nation of unenlightened half-wits could have taken this beautiful place and turned it into what it is today, a shopping mall. A big fucking shopping mall. You know that? That's all you got. That's all you've got here, folks. Mile after mile of mall after mall. Many, many malls. Major malls and mini malls. They put the mini malls in between the major malls. And in between the mini malls, they put the mini marts. And in between the mini marts, you got the car lots, gas stations, muffler shops, laundromats, cheap hotels, fast food joints, strip clubs, and dirty bookstores. America the Beautiful. One big transcontinental commercial cesspool. And how do the people feel about all this? How do the people feel about living in a coast-to-coast shopping mall? Well, they think it's just fucking dandy. They think it is cool.
You get the point. Cesspool, it's a cesspool. But that really is. That's everything here in South Florida. I mean, you look at a satellite map, there's nothing. I mean, you got the Everglades. I'm surprised they didn't fucking drain that.
They tried.
Oh, they did. That time-lapse map you showed us is fucking crazy.
Yeah. What was that? I missed that.
Did you see that? Was that in this book?
No, it's in one of the books I had, but
but it's, I mean, it just shows what?
It just shows how they, you know, channelized to drain the Everglades. They created rivers that drain the Everglades to the east and west of Lake Okeechobee.
Oh, yeah.
So that the water doesn't overflow Lake Okeechobee and move down into the Everglades as it naturally did, because they wanted to farm south of the Everglades. And then they created all of these, channels.
Series of drainages.
The canals to drain and prevent the flooding.
God, it's brutal, man. That fucking cypress stump we saw, too, was insane. That thing was as big as a redwood.
Yeah.
I mean, the cypress is basically our redwoods. They're the same family.
I know. I think that's one of the things that I feel inspired about is letting people know that this is like what we see and what we grew up with in the woods and in the, you know, wild areas around our houses is just a tiny fraction of what once was. Like, we have no idea what we've lost, and what we've lost was like a massive amount, and we should be angry about that. I think it's important for us to know what has been lost and to know what we need to put back, what we need to restore, and that is possible. We can't bring back thousands of year old cypress, but we can
make sure there's land preserved for them to eventually reach that age. I mean, it's funny too, because before I even got into plants, I knew this shit sucked. Like, I knew this commercial shit, this just endless.
I think everybody, I mean,
not being able
does.
To fucking walk anywhere is insane. Like, they build places with no sidewalks.
Who's excited for the new mattress store around the corner?
Yeah, you know? Like, it's just like just the lowest common denominator, dumbest, most soul sucking shit. No creativity. Yeah. No fucking. I just like who likes shit like this? Like people that like Andrew Tate. Like, it's that kind of dumb shit. Just like,
I don't know that anybody really loves the strip malls. It's just that it is profitable to the developers and the, you know, the people with
it's just the capitalist. Lowest common denominator primate hoarding complex. That's this evolutionary urge to just hoard and just have stuff, but you still feel fucking empty on the inside. You know, like, you're not cultivating good friendships, you're not making art, you're not growing anything, you're not
and
learning
you have
something
no
new.
Real connection to the world around you or your sense of your place in things.
It's a death mindset. I don't know. I can't understand how anyone would want to get rid of this stuff. Or just, I mean, fuck, man. Like, just preserve little patches, you know, just to have open space.
And I would argue that the majority of Floridians agree with you on that. And I mean, that's why we voted for Florida Forever.
Right.
You know, but they're not the early 2000s, the and then, you know, the legislature, who is, you know, funded mostly by larger developers and real estate, you know, folks, they don't really want to fund that, you know, so they keep defunding it essentially. And so I think even most Republicans or conservatives would agree they want to conserve land, they want to have natural areas that support wildlife,
unless they have an opportunity to develop that, unless it's right. It's just this really shit for brained.
It's a mentality, I think, that like we always think that there's going to be wild areas somewhere else supporting life.
You could just drive there. Right.
And I don't think people realize that, like, we're creating ecological sinks that are dependent upon the environment, functioning ecosystems around us. And when we, as we continue to expand, those ecosystems get less and less functionable, and they're failing. You know, our ecosystems are failing, and you can't just have everything be covered in cities. In fact, you can't even continue to support the amount that we've covered. You know.
Yeah, I mean, it's, we were filming, so we've been filming this show, and like the last, you know, the producers didn't really consider how important it would be to go to spend a good amount of time in like any intact natural area. They just kind of looked for whatever crumbs were left, which turned out to be really tiny, and of course
close by.
Yeah, you're never gonna get
Because Miami, Fort Lauderdale, all these areas, it's one big, massive...
Metro area.
Yeah, metro area.
But like when we went to Dickinson today, though, it was like, fuck, I felt all like my anxiety and just fightiness and general fucking... Because I'm a pretty fighty, conflict-prone person.
Antagonistic.
I felt like it lifting off my shoulders, you know? And that's kind of what I felt when I got into this stuff. I was like, I don't feel so bad anymore. Mm-hmm. I spent so much of my life... You know, wanting to burn shit down, vandalize shit, steal shit.
Yeah.
Ethically steal shit, you know, from chain stores. But, and now being in these beautiful places, it's like I just feel better. And that's why it encouraged me to learn more about them, you know? It's like it was a total drug for me.
Me too. I am not antagonistic or quite. I deal with my emotions in a different way. I'm fucked up in a different way. I get depressed and like sink into like a, like very depressive episodes occasionally. And, you know, for me, my mom got sick when I was really young, and the only thing that really pulled me out of that and made me feel like alive and made me feel like there was hope and joy and things to live for, it was, you know, connecting with nature. And throughout my life, that has been like the touchstone for me to like get to feel back connected with myself, to feel like things are okay, even, you know, is to just go outside, experience nature, breathe, and you know, get to. And I think that that's not just by like happenstance. It's because that humans, that's what we evolved with. That's what we're adapted to. That's what we, those are our habitat requirements.
Right. Well, like being in Dickinson today, looking at all those fucking scrub jays, you know, trying to get us to give them food, seeing that Lupinus diffusus, beautiful fucking species, only instead of having three leaves, only had one simple unifoliate plant with the purple flowers. I mean, just to seeing the whole like plant community there too, it was like, oh my god, the fucking white sand. I guess it's calcareous, but sand's normally silica. I don't know where that sandstone had originally weathered from, but yeah, I just, you know, I think the reason it's been such a turnoff, maybe people haven't gotten into it yet, is because it's, when it's presented in American culture, it's always presented on this plate of like the same, like super white, soft, fucking, I mean, not the sole reason, but, and academic too, like kind of like academic high horse. You know, it hasn't been presented in
a
way.
I also think that a lot of people legitimately do not have the mental space or time, essentially, to reconnect with nature, to go out.
There's nowhere to go.
They're in the rat race of American society, right, and they are burnt to the nub already trying to, like,
right, that's survive kind of the way it's day set up. To day. Yeah. It's kind of set up
literally
so you
the way
can't.
It's set up. So you don't have time to think about these things, and it is, like, really a privilege to have the ability to reconnect and to... For us to have be, for me at least, to have grown up in an area where I can go to natural areas and see somewhat intact habitat. You know, if I grew up in, you know, Miami
being like a young person, you don't have a car.
Yeah.
Like how fucking expensive a car
is. I mean,
having to own
no
a car
wonder
is a sham. Like that's
the
a
suicide fucking
gimmick,
rates
man.
Of young people are so high. You
yeah.
know? Like, I couldn't do that.
No. I mean, when I was young, yeah, I tried going to school for a while. I dropped out, and then I was like, I just want to be a bum and travel. I'm going to fucking steal shit. I'm going to get, you know, I'm going to get on fucking welfare. I'm going to ride trains around. I need to travel. I need to see things, and I don't have excess money to do it or fun, so I'm just going to fucking, you know. But, yeah, not everyone has the ability to do that. And I mean, I don't know. I was lucky in that regard, but...
But in some ways, you know, the internet has democratized that, and videos like yours online... having that accessible to them, which, you know, most people have to have a cell phone in order to survive these days, and they have that accessible to them, and that is meaningful and is important.
Absolutely. Like human beings, like, we're narrative minded, right? We like think in stories. So we're narrative minded. So we need the story before we go and do something. And that's why like advertising is so successful, right? Because it says, hey, here's the story. If you go to this store and buy this thing, you will have this result. You will have this lifestyle. And there's no one like advocating for nature in that way and putting that out there, right? It's like,
yeah.
Until now,
like, because it's not profitable,
right? Exactly. But then you have all of these, you know, explorers and ecologists and people like you and Joey who are going
and people
out there
who are like, I can't survive without this, and I need to spread the word. Like,
right? Exactly.
I feel like if there's any reason worth living for, it's to spread this message.
And that's what it is. Is like people need something to be like, hey, what's the story? What's the story? What are we doing? Where are we going? What are we getting into here? Oh, okay, I can go to nature. It can be like this, this, and this. And like you said, it's like you need to connect to nature, because otherwise you're isolated and you have no context for yourself. And like isolation kills. Just like plants, humans are creatures of community. Like we're interconnected with one another. Like if we don't have connection, we die.
Yeah, I imagine what it would be like, man. Like I remember what it was when I thought that the entire world... I just had that myopia. I thought the entire world was just what humans built. Like, it was just what was around me. It wasn't... I had no clue about, like, geologic timescale, how old the Earth was, when life evolved, how we even figured out any of these things, what different, you know, plant communities were, how they related to climate, to soils, to all this other shit, how everything was connected. My world was really small, and it was just felt so fucking...
hopeless.
Yeah, just... fucking hopeless, man. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, and yeah, I don't know. And like I was into a lot of punk rock at the time, fucking angry anyway. So it was just kind of, I just kind of had this like nihilistic burn all down mentality, you know, mixed with like some leftist ethics, you know. But it was not a positive. And then I found this shit, and yeah, it kind of saved me. So, but anyway, let's talk about some of the shit that we saw today, some mm-hmm. of the things, the plant community. So, we get what are called hammocks down here, right? Mm-hmm. How would you describe a hammock?
It's usually like a lower lying area with hardwoods, where the hardwoods occur, whereas the higher, sandier, drier areas have more pines, obviously some hardwoods, but they're not quite as dense or shaded.
Thinner soils, more exposed rock. Those are the pine rocklands, then you have the hardwood hammocks.
Yeah.
And then you've got cypress... dominated areas in the middle of that, like that are regularly inundated.
Yeah,
what do you
they're
call those?
Like cypress swamps, cypress domes, cypress stringers. It depends on like, you know, what they're doing.
Yeah.
but yeah, there's a host of associates that occur in those different habitats.
Because people think of the Everglades and they think of just swamp, but there's actual rock.
There are
in that
dry
too.
Pine rocklands in the Everglades.
I love those dry arid rock. Microsites. So we're Al's taking off. He's got to take a call over there. But no, the dry arid microsites are where you see the good shit, like the prickly pears.
That's what you like.
That's for me.
I like
well,
the
yeah,
wet
it's,
areas
I'm talking about
too,
my shit. Yeah, I mean, you yeah. got you know.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, it's super diverse, even within the Everglades. I think people don't realize that there are a variety of plant communities found there with a variety of soil types, and I think a lot of people would probably be surprised.
The dry
it's not
sites.
Just swamp.
Like the Opuntia, the Opuntia.
Yeah, and there are Opuntia in the swamps, too. There are species that are, like, adapted to wet areas.
Yeah, Jesus Christ. What type of soils do they grow on?
Like, I mean, it's pretty mucky, heavy soil.
Mucky, ooh, like a mucky cesspool. Okay, so let's talk about, like, yesterday. What was the spot we went to where the guy was talking about the cesspool?
The fern forest.
Yeah, the fern forest. Yeah,
north of Fort Lauderdale.
Oh, we saw that fucking Zamia.
And Davy, I guess.
North America's only.
Yeah, Zamia integrifolia.
Only cycad. With butterflies, the...
The Atala butterfly.
The species, yeah, the specifics, you know.
That was thought to be extirpated. It was considered extinct because no one had seen one in so long. And then with, you know, the the Kunti had gone, you know, its larval host plant.
Kunti. I was calling Zamia. It Kuntai.
Yeah. No.
Kuntai.
I mean, you can call it whatever you want. Zamia. I guess. Some people probably call
but
it
But it's Kuntai. Zamia. It's a cycad. It's a gymnosperm.
That plant had become rare in the natural areas. And then it's a great conservation story, actually, because it became slightly more popular in the horticultural industry and people began planting it in yards and in commercial landscapes. And the butterfly has reappeared and bounced back in numbers. I believe it's still an endangered species, but we saw dozens of them on a few Kunti plants out in front of
them. Yeah, how are they eating those leaves? It's nuts, because the leaves are like plastic on that
adaptation. Zamia. Yeah.
Fucking A. But yeah, a lot of cycads have toxic secondary chemistry, so it makes sense there would be a, a butterfly species that uses them as a host plant. Same with the Xanthoxylum. Mm-hmm. Or are they calling it native lime or something?
Wild lime.
It doesn't look anything like a lime. It's just in the lime family. It's these fucking common names. It drives me nuts. I was like asking a landscape man, like, what it is? He's like, oh, come on. I'm like, the fuck? I don't know. Like, I didn't say that I was nice. But
no,
I just,
you did
mind,
say that.
Really? I mean, but in my mind, I'm
you
like,
were like, don't
fuck.
You want to learn again?
Well, that was because he made a joke about Al being fat. And I was like, it was just inappropriate timing. Because we'd just been having a heart-to-heart talking about our feelings and stuff. Yeah. Do you want some of this decaf?
I would like. Oh, wait, no, I thought. I'll have some chamomile tea.
Really?
Do we have any left?
I think so, yeah. In a hotel. Wait, where'd it go? Ah, fuck. No! I'll have to go. Oh, wait, no, we got some. Yeah.
Well, so we saw the wild lime, the Xanthoxylum fagera, right?
An inundated area, too.
Yeah, and that's what's interesting about a lot of Florida native species, actually. You know, they can become adapted to severe sites, like slight, very dry, rocky, sandier soils. Like we saw the same species today in Jonathan Dickinson State Park in sandy, dry, rocky soils in full sun. And we also saw it at the fern forest in wet, muckier soils and partial shade in a canopy.
That same Xanthoxylum we get in South Texas too, but it's phenotypically different. It's, I guess, same species, but it looks different.
Yeah, we'll see
different.
if somebody's already done the genetics on that.
Yeah, you could see the selection. The Texas one is meaner, too, which makes sense. The fuck did I end up living in Texas, man? I don't know. It works for now. I'm like an hour from wild peyote populations. So I'll take it. I just had to get the fuck out of California. I'd been there too long. I needed a new... there was no middle class left anymore. I needed to live somewhere that was affordable, and I needed a new cast of plant species. And I liked that Cretaceous limestone. But, damn, that Palifoxia was...
Oh, yeah. I'm so glad you got to finally see that.
That was burning me up inside, man. That was nice.
Yeah, that's such a cool species.
Palifoxia Faye. F-E-A-Y-A.
Faye's Palifox.
Who's Faye?
I am not sure.
Was he a prick or was he a nice guy?
He has quite a few plants named after him.
Maybe he was a gentle guy. Maybe he was like a really nice guy. He was into like dropping acid in the pine
rock. Probably unlikely.
Probably not. How many botanists in Florida are doing acid once a year at least?
I refuse to name names.
When's the last time you did? When's the last time you did acid?
I've never.
Oh my god!
Acid, so.
I gotta fucking mail you some acid. I gotta get my guy to mail you some acid. We'll get you some acid. You just, you know, it's a commitment. It's like a 10-hour commitment. You gotta make sure you're in a good place. Never forget the time I did acid. And my friend's wife was like upset at me the whole time that she's like, "You're on drugs." I'm like, "It's fucking acid. It's not drugs. Come on. It's like I'm doing like rails of blow. Like what?" But we were up in at like 9,000 feet in the Sierra Nevada. It was really surreal. It was nice. Then I called my mom later. It's like, "Mom, on acid in a sushi restaurant." We ended up going to get sushi at like fucking 6 p.m. that day. I don't know. Anyway.
The Palifoxia.
Yeah. That was cool because no ligules. It just looks like, so you don't have any of those pink daisy rays. Well, some Palifoxia have ligules, some don't. But the ones you get in North Florida, they have ligules, or
they do.
We get a couple in. I got some in my yard in Texas that don't have any ligules. But this thing was a banger, man. It was just
really rad. It's
tubular white corollas that kind of spread out from the involucre. So it's not so much like a little cup. It's like
And then the curly stigma at the top there.
Right, yeah, that style. Yeah, it was, man. But And then what was the... There was another species of composite I showed you with that spherical... It had like a globe-shaped capitulum. But you knew it. It began with an M, right? It was like a
winding... I'm trying to remember which one we were talking about.
It was... I didn't see it with you. I saw it with Charlie. He took us out somewhere.
But we saw Dahlia Fayi as well, another
Melanthera, Fayi. That was it.
Oh, yeah, Melanthera, one of my favorites.
God, there's so
that
many
cool... That one is in the horticultural trade.
So many cool composites out here, yeah, man.
There are.
I've been meaning to get out to Florida. It's just, like I said, it's been hard. It's like trying to take the BART train to San Francisco and you live in Oakland, you know?
Yeah. Melanthera is so... It's becoming more popular, but it's such a... I made a video on my Instagram earlier this year about it because it's just like I planted one this spring. It was a sad, piddling little thing I had started from seed and had in a pot for years. The poor thing. Planted in the ground in this new house, this new yard I have. And it grew to be like probably like 5 feet by 5 feet and covered in flowers for at least like 4 or 5 months. And just covered in insects every day, just like so full of life.
Like pollinators or
all kinds of, yeah. No, all kinds of pollinators, damn. Things visiting the flowers. Yeah.
God, it's so nice.
It's a stellar plant, super easy to grow, you know, easy to grow from seed.
It's got such a unique shape to the flower head, to the capitulum.
Long
too.
Season of bloom, yeah. So red flowers.
So where we are, we get, like where we are right now in Miami, you get this. It's kind of the mixture of northern species and stuff from the Antilles, the Caribbean, yeah. Stuff I've seen in the Dominican Republic.
Like, we saw Acer rubrum also out
right,
of the
a northern
forest. Yeah.
Species. Like in
growing with Tillandsia in it.
Some that grows in New England, yeah.
Yeah.
How many species of Tillandsia? Quite a few, right?
There are like a lot, yeah.
A shit ton. What was fasciculata was the big one?
That's the more common, well, one of the more common that ones,
huge.
That big one
yeah.
We saw,
we just
yeah.
We get Baylii, which is kind of rare, and then we get Usneoides in Texas, and then the common one, the reticulata, the ball moss.
We have just the Usneoides and Bartramii in North Florida.
What's Bartramii?
It's a species of Tillandsia.
I mean, describe it. Is it like?
I mean, it's a fairly smaller one. It forms like dense, you know, kind of dense, you know, clusters. I would say on.
It doesn't have these long leaves like some of the.
No,
ones
it has here. Fairly short leaves. It's like less than 4 inches usually. Mm-hmm. So it's not quite as showy, but it's still super rad. And there are some little swamps in Florida where you get like dense colonies of it, which is fun to see in North Florida.
Man, not to go back to a bummer topic, but I was blown away that there's not really any native nurseries down here. There's not like any big ones. Like
there are a few, but they are small. Yeah, true. I mean, when we were talking about the yard and everything, and you said that like Florida is where, you know, California was like 20, 50 years ago when the native plant industry really started taking off. I think that's really correct. I think we're like right at, it's starting to move uphill where there's, you know, it's starting with the consumer, you know, demanding more native plants.
And backyard growers are really
the large commercial industry is resistant to those demands, those requests being made.
We want the ornamental crotons.
Yeah, and so it's smaller growers that are feeling that niche.
That cart of ornamental crotons killed me yesterday. I saw that.
I wanted to lay down.
I wanted to like jump in the bathtub with a fucking toaster. Yeah.
That whole nursery was a little depressing for you.
Oh my God, man.
You have very visceral reactions to
crotons. I can't fucking hide it, man. This is why I catch all these flack from these fucking, you know, angry zoomers, you know? I can't hide my feelings. No filter.
Yeah.
But, God, man, they had a couple. What else did they have that was just fucking
It was just
pain?
A lot of annuals, you know, like so many annuals. A lot of non-native annuals, you know.
And other
I mean,
shit
granted,
you could
down
tell
here,
a
lot of them are probably not annuals.
Yeah, and I don't
want
to shit on I don't want to shit on it, but it was just like, you know, you just really you see that and you realize why we got so much. Right, that's what's out there, but it's
that's, you know, what, and people, I bet, yeah, think like, is belongs in their landscape.
Right, and I bet the way the culture is done here, if they even started, you know, offering a lot of natives, HOAs, they would sit there empty, like, yeah, or they would sit there unpurchased.
Or a lot of these are very, you know, they have homeowners associations, and everybody is concerned about their property value, and they don't want a yard that looks messy.
Charlie, yeah, the guy, one of the guys whose yards were doing, he was telling me, he's like, yeah, they don't call it climate change, you know, they don't call it sea level rise, they call it king tides or some shit. It's like, fucking A, man. That's like some out of a Mike Judge movie.
Yeah.
It's just so twisted.
It's head in the sand, you know.
Yeah.
They refuse to. People don't. It's not. It's inconvenient truth, as Al Gore said.
Oh, God, the native. Al Gore, don't talk about him. He invented the internet. Okay. He's coming. He's part of the whole conspiracy with Soros. I think that phrase is
really, really spot on, you know, because it's like a lot of people, it genuinely is just inconvenient for them.
It is, but we can't talk about to Al Gore, though, because like the fucking seriously, that sets off like grandpas immediately, you know, it's, well, Al Gore, oh God. No, but it is. It's uncomfortable. It's like an uncomfortable fucking reality. What it means is that the way we're living is kind of fucked up. Like there's negative repercussions to the way we're living.
Yeah.
Which is like something anyone who's not a jackass knows. This is fucking death cult. Yeah. To me, I just call it a straight-up death cult, but like, everything's fine. Everything's fine, you know? Just keep doing it. It's totally fine. Everything works. But anyway, yeah. I don't know. I just thought, when I saw that cart full of crotons, I was like, oh my God. Because there's, and it sucks, because there's
really
plants.
It's really disappointing. I think that, you know, it is, like, I mean, I worked at a nursery and managed a nursery for many years, and I really think that, you know, the core of the issue is a lack of ecological education in school. You know, they should be teaching ecology from a very young age throughout school. You know, I feel like that should be a critical component in our curriculum. But in the meantime, you know, it's up to nurseries and people who are selling plants to educate their consumers and to not just sell them what they ask for because they read it in Southern Living or whatever,
right,
you know?
Right.
Like, when I was working at a nursery, like, we stopped selling certain plants because we saw them spreading by seed and we saw them, becoming invasive, essentially. And, you know, the customer still asked for those plants. And I can't tell you how many times I would say, no, we don't sell that plant because it's sometimes in a listed invasive species.
Would be such a dick. I'd be like, oh, you know, I won't sell it because it sucks. I think of places that make me nauseous being in those places. That's what it'd be like if you, I don't know, what's like, it'd be like if you got tortured, like waterboarded in a room that had, you know, pink wallpaper. You'd never want to see pink wallpaper again. That's what I feel like when I see the ornamental crotons, which I didn't even know they were crotons until someone told me. Because I think crotons, I think of all the cool native species of crotons, which it's such a fucking beautiful. That's what drives me nuts. Like, there's so many beautiful native alternatives to it.
But it's our job when someone says, I want it to spread invasively, you know, which I heard people say that all the time, to tell them why actually they don't want it to spread invasively, because it's not just, oh, you know, I don't want to have to see my neighbor's truck, you know, or whatever. They have to consider the long-term repercussions of what they add or remove from their yard.
Yeah, where do you start with that, right? Like, the whole outlook on the ecosystem, on the landscape is just, you got to start from square one, you know?
Yeah.
I liked what you said the other day when it's like, it's not your land, you're borrowing it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really the way that a lot of native people here thought of that.
We're your stewards of the land.
Yeah, it's not yours. You're borrowing it.
Yeah, and we are a part of the ecosystem that should be playing, you know, playing along well with others.
Yeah. Yeah, but I don't know. That was such a good point to make. And it's so anti-American.
I think that people, anti-modern American. They buy a plot of land, they look at it, and they think, oh, I like the way this tree looks. I look at a magazine and I pick things based on aesthetic value, when in reality, they have to consider that their land is like a piece of a fabric of this cloth that makes up an entire ecosystem. And that ecosystem, it's not just like there for the birds and the bees, it's there for us as well. Like, our humanity also depends upon functioning ecosystems. And so your yard has to play its role. It has to perform its functions in order for long-term survival of humanity as well, and even short-term health and happiness as well.
It's like old school Christmas lights, you know. If you take one of those Christmas lights out, the whole fucking string goes out.
Yeah.
But also, people are like, well, why is that important? I mean, for me, it just feels so innately good. I don't even know how to answer that. I'm like, because it fucking feels good. Because it feels good to come home, you know, to a yard that's full of a bunch of different life forms and diversity, and it's like soothing and peaceful. Yes. Maybe other people feel that way when they look at a lawn or something.
I think many of us plant people are similar in that we can get stuck in our heads in these like depressive, obsessive mental states. And for me, when I spend time outside, it pulls me out of that, of my, you know, sick head.
Oh, yeah.
And like, it makes me feel like right-sized. It makes me feel like, oh, I'm just one among many in this big functioning thing, you know? And it takes almost like the pressure off of me of being this like person performing this role in this fucked up system that we have outside here, you know, that is detached from the real reality happening in the world. And I actually feel like relaxed, like, oh, okay, I don't have to check off this to-do list. I don't have to like, the world isn't going to end if I don't do those things. Like, I can just be here. And that's a massive relief. You know, that's a massive, like, burden off of me.
It feels so good. It feels so good to, I don't know, like, tend to a garden. But yes. More importantly, like,
that's like Voltaire's Candide.
Garden. Did he say that?
That's the whole point of Candide, is the moral of the story is to, he's searching for happiness, and he comes to the realization at the end where he says, I just have to tend my garden. And it's like, you just do what my life role, I feel like, is to do what I can where I can. And so I don't have to like remove all the invasives, and I don't have to like convince everybody to plant native, but it's like, I can do my part, and then I get to see the fruits of my labor. I get to see the outcome of the work I do. And that's really fulfilling. It makes me feel like,
I'm fulfilling
my human role.
Yeah, that was something Liv said today that was cool. She was like, I just look at how fucked up the world is, and like, I can't do anything, whatever, but here's something I can actually do.
It's empowering.
And it's true. It really is true.
And I think that, you know, I say this a lot in workshops I teach about, like, monarchs and milkweed, is like this idea that your yard matters and what you add or remove from your yard is really empowering in an era when, you know, you can't save the polar bears with your individual actions. You know, you can't do a lot of things. You can't accomplish, you can't save the Amazon, but you can plant some native plants and then see the fruits of your labor. You can see the birds and bees and butterflies and everything returning to your property. You can see the, you know, clutch of baby bluebirds that are there because you've planted native and they have food to survive.
Right, or all the butterflies, you know, lurking around.
Yeah. And that's really like, that's spiritual, you know?
That's really like what it is. That's what it is. It's a cut to the fucking chase. Yeah. Let's cut to the fucking chase. Yeah. Like, that's what's at
this
the essence.
Now a spirituality
that's
podcast.
That's what's at the essence of it. Yeah, all these fucking, all these like people with the meme, or not meme, but like the Instagram accounts with like the inspirational quotes and the get in touch with your, shut up and just plant the garden, man. Yeah. Go learn about like native ecosystems. Yeah. Quit fucking, you know. I mean, you could do all this too, whatever, but you really want to walk the walk.
Yeah.
There is something innately fulfilling about that. Yeah, totally.
It is. And I mean, that's a part of what we need as humans, I think, you know, that fills a void that,
I mean, if
that
you think
our
about
current
it,
society
driving lacks. And being angry in traffic all the time is spiritual too, in a really negative way. You know, people are already participating in a kind of dark spirituality.
Yeah.
You know, look at these fucking, you know, people that are just so pissed off and turned up all the time. And just obviously miserable.
That's the devil at work.
It's the I tell you, that's the devil at work. Well, we are in the South.
I know.
I mean, it's that's letting what it is yeah, it's letting the your surrounding environment affect you. Do you want it to be the fucking strip malls and the parking lots and the endless traffic and this fucking and you race?
Can't change, but your and everyday actions can't necessarily change that. But you can
put yourself in a different place. That's
your
gonna,
yard. You know
what's like, well, what's going to go in? Yeah, like what you're exposed to. You expose all this dark shit on the internet. Yeah. You fucking arguing with people. You know,
and you can
road rage. Or are you going to be exposed to like the swallowtails that are hanging out in the xanthoxylum in your front yard? You know,
yeah, and you can spread the message to your neighbors in a nice way. I always like, I think sometimes people talk about when they're like, they get excited and enthused and inspired about native plants, and then they want to like tell everybody what they're doing wrong in their neighborhood, you know?
No, yeah, that's when not the way.
You got to be like kind and inclusive, and just if people want to know, then you tell them.
Or just, don't excited and loving. Don't shit on anybody. Just, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I shit on a lot of the strip mall stuff. I can't, but I can't help it. It's just, it makes me feel so bad. It's terrible, man.
I
mean,
I think it makes us all feel bad.
It's a fucking death cult.
I don't think there's anybody that sees another strip mall go in and is like excited about that.
That is some dark shit. Yeah, and you see no one in those kinds of environments seems happy. None of those people seem genuinely happy.
Yeah.
I see a lot of like anger and fucking loneliness and alienation and anxiety. Yeah. And stress.
And I think this new younger generation sees that as well. And I have a lot of hope that they are becoming active and they're enthused and inspired. And, you know, the work that you do and the work that I do and all of us together, all of the people listening to this, you know, that makes a difference. And
let's hear it for the kids.
Yeah.
For the
kids. We're here for the kids.
No, for the kids. Bat for tats. Bat for tats. But, well, let's talk. We got to talk more about the plant stuff. I was so stoked to see Metopium toxiferum. That nasty bastard. Are you familiar?
Which one?
Metopium toxiferum.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Rushiol. Yes, it's like a giant poison oak tree.
Yes, the poison.
You can just see it. It's so shiny and glistening. Yeah. All that oil and wicks all over the fucking leaves, man. Because I react really bad.
It hides well, too. It looks so much like all of the other.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it looks like from a distance, maybe at first. It's got that odd pinnate leaf thing. Mm-hmm. It could be Bursera cimaruba. Yeah. It could be
all these tropical plants that
Cimaruba glauca. Another really cool. Cimarubaceae, the Ailanthus family, cool native.
That's a beautiful.
Scott told me, he said he got it. He got the Metopium before. He said it's worse than poison oak, but it's not as bad
as poison sumac. I think all of us, when we went down to the Keys together, we all got a little bit of it here and there.
God damn.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to avoid when you're, especially in the Pine Rocklands, and they're like, you know, at waist high or lower, and because they're, you know, in harsh environments. And it's not that bad. It's like, I mean, poison ivy sucks. You know, it's kind of like poison ivy.
He said it was worse than poison
ivy. I mean, a little bit worse, but
I mean, maybe just worse because it's just, it's a larger leaf. It's a larger leaf surface. There's more.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I mean, you know, it's not the plant's fault. Urushiol is an antifungal. That's the evolutionary benefit of it. It's not doing it for us.
And maybe it keeps some assholes out of the Pine Rocklands.
Yeah. Well, they don't learn about it till later, you know. Yeah. That's the only thing.
Well, and maybe tomorrow we'll see Hippomane as well.
Yeah, Hippomane, which is Euphorbiaceae.
Manchineal.
Yeah, which is, what's up with this? Tell everybody what's up with Hippomane.
It's the most dangerous tree in America. It's I don't even know the name of the toxin. You probably know it.
I don't.
Okay. No. But it's Euphorbiaceae, so it probably has alkaloids in it.
Right.
And
really nasty shit in that family.
It's very I mean, it's not going to kill you just touching it. I have heard stories from botanists that, you know, when it's raining, which it rains a lot in the Everglades, and if you happen to be walking under it, it can cause blindness, temporary blindness.
Jesus Christ. And it just looks like
another tropical tree with long simple petioles
that are almost as long as those simple leaves.
Yeah,
I guess they're kind of ovate.
Yeah,
glabrous.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, it looks like, you
pretty
know,
pretty basic tropical tree.
Damn. But then it's got those fruits too that are super toxic. Well, what disperses the fruits?
I'm not sure.
God, that's nasty.
Yeah.
Man, there's so many. Man, there was a there was another member, different family, Anacardiaceae. There were two other members of Anacardiaceae that continue Rusciol that I met in Tehuacan Valley, mm-hmm. in Puebla, on the Puebla-Oaxaca border. Beautiful leaves on them, but I could tell they were an Anacardiaceae when I first saw them. So now, after my Comocladia incident in the Dominican Republic, where I was like fondling Comocladia and then like 2 days later blew up, my whole face blew up. I had to go on La Prednisona. I learned my lesson, so I'm a lot more careful. But and then I found out later, yeah, they do have urushiol in them, which is the compound that causes. Oh,
and the other thing about it is the fruit is tasty.
No.
Yeah. And potentially fatal if ingested.
God, Jesus.
So I think occasionally it washes up on beaches and that can be an issue.
And there are species that are immune to its toxicity.
Yeah.
Oh, the iguana. The iguana is
eats it. That's right. I have
manchineal
heard that.
Trees
yeah.
are poisonous to birds, but not Central and South American striped iguanas.
And so, according to legend, the Calusa people, an indigenous tribe in South Florida, used manchineal-tipped arrows to wound Ponce de Leon, the Spanish conquistador.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and he eventually died. I mean, supposedly from this, but that's
what you got
to
do.
You got to invite them out
to like a feast. All those the conquistadors would be like, we just want to settle the beef. With you know?
Yeah.
We got a casserole here for you. We got some other dishes. Would you try them?
Yeah, try this apple.
Yeah. Fucking A, man. I wonder what that must have been like. Who were the people that lived here before the honkies got here?
I mean, I don't know all of them, but the Miccosukee were a large tribe in Florida. The Seminole moved down after being pushed down here, essentially. The Calusa, the Muscogee. Now my mind's drawing a blank, but yeah. And there's still a lot of tribes when we go to the Everglades tomorrow, we'll go by the Miccosukee Center.
Mm, oh, cool.
And yeah, there's still a large presence of indigenous people who, are living out here today.
Yeah. So it's going to be
persisted much like these small amount of pine rocklands.
Like the little leftover crumbs of habitat.
So, but it's still a thriving community of people, and they still continue to, to steward the land as we should all be doing.
Right. Know? Yeah, let's hope one day maybe there'll be more of a movement in South Florida, man.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, it's rough under DeSantis for sure. It's like,
the living and breathing ventriloquist dummy.
Joey pointed out that he looks like a ventriloquist dummy, and you're not wrong.
God, with that fucking hair too.
Yeah.
Jeez, why do all the fucking Republicans look like this, man? It's like this really. There's just look like some
boring,
like villain from a fucking, 80s movie or something. You know, it's like Trump's actually was a character
was,
in the fucking one of the Back to the Future movies was based on Trump.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the fucking guy who wrote it said that. Yeah, Biff.
Oh, wow.
Biff. I remember seeing those movies when I was young.
Yeah,
you know?
A bully.
Yeah, totally. Total Trump, Yeah. Just like, I don't know. So,
I mean, I'm excited to go into the Everglades tomorrow. We should see some orchids, some epiphytic orchids in bloom.
Oh, yeah. I saw...
Encyclia cochleata, one of my favorites of all time.
I saw Encyclia tampanensis.
Tampensis. Yeah.
There you go.
I mean, I could be pronouncing it wrong,
too.
No,
you're right.
But,
I was thinking tampon. I was thinking like psilocybe tampanensis and sclerotia for me.
So you saw the butterfly orchid in bloom?
No, I just saw
online.
With pseudo ball. I just saw it on the ground. Yeah, it was near Deering. Where the fuck is this? Where was the spot? It was such a small near Deering Estate.
Okay,
basically south of here by Palmetto Bay.
Yeah, so that's it's not an uncommon species even in neighborhoods. And it's so gorgeous. I mean,
really?
What a beautiful plant.
That's so
a lot
cool.
of variety and
fucking epiphytic
form.
Orchids, man. Spermacoce verticillata. That's that thing. It's a Rubiaceae, but it looks like it would be like some sort of polygamy.
Yeah, yeah, that's everywhere.
It's like a verticillate umbel, kind of like a spherical umbel. The Psychotria is here. You get.
Oh, yeah.
What is it? Nervosa, and what's the other one?
Tenuifolia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw them. Yeah, they look beautiful. Like some.
Super common. The leaves like have everywhere.
That kind of gardenia look to them.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah. Shiny and that kind of like wrinkled, corrugated look.
God damn. It's super. But when do they flower? The summer or what?
I mean, it seems like down here, I mean, a lot of them. Yeah, I guess I would say I didn't see any flowering. A lot were fruiting still. But yeah, I guess it would be in like summer.
And Calocarpa,
I've seen them
course.
Blooming in fall as well. But
Calocarpa, you know, Lamiaceae, which has a huge
that's
range.
That's everywhere. How far north does that go? Do you know?
I've seen it in like Arkansas, Oklahoma.
Yeah. That's
Southern
a
Missouri.
Prolific species. Like,
I wonder if it would survive in the Midwest. It's got, I'm sure. Because a lot of
this
stuff,
you know,
is,
there's a non-native Asian species that is becoming invasive.
Really?
In the southeast here, yeah. It's
God
like
damn
they,
it.
Like
what
the native one just wasn't enough.
Yeah, why?
They had to import something else that looks slightly different.
What a shit for brain move. And also,
I mean,
just,
it's profit is for profit.
But
profit,
just
profit,
knowing
profit,
that, like,
know?
That's probably not going to go well if you bring this in. It's probably invasive.
It doesn't matter
because we
them.
Already have
it's
a native
short-term game. Short-term game. That is the name of the American.
Yeah, I've been
game.
Spoiled living in California for too long because that shit. I mean, that would happen in California, but it doesn't. Not as much. Like, there's just so much more of an awareness. There's like, there's fucking
there's
laws.
There's not
out there.
Yet here. I mean, I do feel like that's changing. But
there's actual laws
yeah,
out there about
and there
invasive
should be,
plants.
Yeah. I mean, the older I get and the like more jaded I get, the more I'm like it. Shouldn't be legal to plant non-native species.
It shouldn't.
You know?
Because it,
I mean,
it affects
I
everyone.
I have non-native plants, and I totally get, you know, the desire. I mean, my entry into the plant world was non-native bulbs. That was, like, what I first got into when I was a kid. And I was, like, someone gave me an amaryllis, I think. And I was, like, bulbs, oh, my God. And
right.
I just wanted to, like, learn everything about them and buy all of them. And I understand that desire to collect and to, you know, have different things and buy something from somewhere else that you've only read about in a book. But the more, you know, I think the antidote to that type of mentality would be ecological education in schools, you
right.
know, like if people understood the ramifications.
Yeah, and also
decisions.
It's about the habitat. It's not about you possessing something. I mean, there yeah. it shouldn't be illegal to sell or grow non-natives, but there should be a strong distinction between non-native and invasive, and it should not be legal to sell invasive.
But we don't know what's going to become invasive.
Well, that's why there's research and there's studies and there's testing. And
well, then you would have to say that, you know, a plant needs to be tested for 50 years before.
Right.
You know?
No, not necessarily. It's still better now. I mean, there's shit. They're selling shit still that we know is invasive and have known as invasive for fucking decades.
I agree. Yeah.
That should be illegal. There should be
that at the very least. But a lot of those plants are cash crops for the horticultural industry.
It's so fucked. And, it's so whack.
You know, it's like there's a palette of plants that landscapers use in every different region of the country. And most of them almost exclusively are non-native. And, you know, it just becomes like this, you know, people don't think about it. They're like, oh, I want a flowering plant. This is,
oh, but it looks
these
so
are your
nice
five choices you have.
It looks,
you know?
So tropical. It's so tropical and exotic, when really it's a cesspool.
And it's, you know, what's really interesting to me and, like, so surprising is, like, even native plant people, well, they have, you know, they will defend plants that are legitimately invasive because they just don't want, it's an inconvenient truth, yet again, you know?
You can't use that tagline, though, man. I'm telling
care.
You can't be it's using Al Gore one-liners.
It's a good phrase. Because they're like, but but this non-native milkweed I have, like the monarchs love it. And well, you know, it's an invasive.
Curacivica, right?
Curacivica, yeah. However you want to pronounce it, but yes, Asclepias curacivica, tropical milkweed.
And explain to everybody why that's a problem. That species.
That's like a whole podcast.
No, just really quick, because you could do it. You did it two days ago.
Yeah, yeah. So for one, it legitimately is an invasive species that is. you know, forming dense right. colonies.
We saw it yesterday
in Florida. Yeah, you know, it's popping up everywhere. It's formed dense colonies, especially in South Florida, but I see it all the way up into North Florida, spreading invasively in natural areas. And it very prolific in its seeding abilities, but one of the real issues is that it's a tropical species, so it doesn't have a natural senescence period. It doesn't just die back in the winter or in fall like our native species, you know.
The vegetative parts die
back.
Yeah,
they die
winter.
Back to their root system to for the winter and then come back up in the spring. And the monarch butterfly has evolved with this parasite, which, you know, a parasite doesn't want to kill its host. It wants its host to remain, you know, living in order for it to feed off of it. But they've evolved in this balance, you know, with this parasite. And because the tropical milkweed doesn't naturally senesce, it stays up year-round, the parasite accumulates on the leaves of it. And so it's never essentially cleaned off the plant, and it can accumulate and has increased the, you know, burden of this parasite in the population, which is causing like severe issues because the butterflies can still fly and function with a certain carrying capacity of this parasite, OE it's called. But they often can't successfully perform their winter migration. So they're able to survive migrating down possibly, but aren't able to make it back up. And so it's having devastating effects on the species as a whole. And there's research that suggests recently that just the presence of tropical milkweed, like the chemical composition of the plant when the insect lands on it, triggers the monarch to think that it's now reached its point and it is not migrating. It
right,
essentially
it's
is
Mexico,
yeah. So essentially, it is preventing migration. So that's a real issue. And so you know, people, you know, when I tell people that, they don't want to hear it because they have so many monarchs on their milkweed and they think, but look, all of these monarchs that I'm providing to the population as a whole, right? But in reality, you know, you have to listen to the science. You have to let the science lead you.
But also, there's just so many cool native species of milkweed.
I know.
In Florida.
I know.
And Texas,
but they're hard to get.
Right, because there's no native nurseries. It's the same
not
shit
enough.
We were talking about earlier.
Yeah, there are some, but there aren't, you know, enough to supply the demand.
With how few there are, I feel like it's safe saying there's none. I mean, there's a
That's
couple.
That's not
there's
true, because there. I mean, if you go on the Florida Association of Native Nurseries website, you will see plenty of nurseries across the state, but it's still not enough. And especially with milkweed, when there's such a high demand, they can't produce enough to reach demand, to supply demand.
This is what
demand.
I was talking about. The backyard grower thing is so important. I mean, I feel like that's how any native plant movement gets started. It's just like a couple people who are just like, I saw these things, I wanted to bring them home, I couldn't find them, so I just took
so if you're in
the
Florida
seeds home and started growing.
And you want to grow native milkweed, like Asclepias incarnata and Asclepias perennis are the easiest to grow, though the most readily available. And Asclepias perennis in particular is really productive as far as producing seed. If you can get seed from a friend, if they have plants, it produces a lot of seed and it's very easy to grow.
What would be the
seed.
Toughest to grow if somebody likes a challenge? I see you posting milkweed.
Yeah, Asclepias humistrata is a tough one to grow. So just any of the sandhill species that are, you know, they send down really deep tap roots and they're very slow growing and they pretty much need to be seeded, direct seeded rather than grown in pots because they have such a long tap root. They don't thrive in pots. It can be done, but it's
like Silphium albiflorum.
Yeah, I know. I remember asking you about that species, and you were like, it requires this tap.
You got to go in the ground. Yeah, you can. This dude I know in Austin saved a bunch of them, dug them up from a spot that they were building an office park, and I was like, man, there's no way they're going to live. And he fucking sent me pictures a couple months later, and he's they did it. I put limestone in the pot. I cut the leaves off. And it just they just had enough energy stored up in that root.
But so each species, especially these, you know, sandhill species, it's like there's a learning curve of trying to find ways to best propagate and grow it. And native plant growers and wholesalers are like trying to do that now, but it's like it takes years to successfully figure out a mode of production that is like, you know, works for each species. So
God, what the Sansevieria? What was the Sansevieria we saw that was invasive?
Oh yeah, I don't know the species name, but God, it's everywhere. Bummer, yeah, and that's a serious issue. Is houseplants? Houseplants are huge with young people now, and planting them in the ground, like a lot of people just think that's harmless. That is really not a good idea.
Again, that's yeah.
Please do not plant your houseplants education in the ground.
Can you imagine if they were teaching people like identify native plants in first grade, like teaching kids that?
Yeah, and bringing them in and shit. That'd that's be so what needs nice. To happen.
Or like, let's go run around in this field and I'll show you all these cool native
plants. I have a lot of hope that like milkweeds might be, the monarch is like a really charismatic species, you know? It's like, it really draws in everyone. And people want to save beautiful things like that.
Yeah.
And I have met so many young kids that they know native milkweed, they know the process of metamorphosis because monarch is a great teaching tool and it's like interesting to kids.
Right.
And I think that story, you know, the story of the decline of the monarch is a real opportunity to like, you know, that's their path of migration covers a lot of land. And if we can, you know, get that species listed and just continue that movement of like bringing people into the fold of wanting to save the species and then talking to them about habitat and how it requires all this habitat in order for it to survive. You know, that's a great...
God, the forests that they go to in Mexico are fucking epic.
Have
too.
You seen them?
Yeah, I've been up there. Me and Alan were up there.
That would be like so cool.
5 years ago, looking for mushrooms. They're just these. It's all Abies religiosa. There's like 10-foot tall lupines and fucking Monotropa everywhere.
Why? Where did it get that species name? Religiosa.
What? Abies religiosa, sacred fir. I'm not probably because of some ethnobotanical importance.
I'm interested
assume.
To hear. I should read more about.
But
that.
They're
that's
cool.
The OML, right? It's also called.
I don't know. I think so. Yeah. Maybe I don't know. I just they're fir trees that you'll see covered in like giant bromeliads and shit. It's nuts.
That's awesome.
Those forests are so special, man. It's so cool, and they're just so rich. The fungal diversity because the firs are mycorrhizal, and there's, you know, lower elevations. There's pines and oaks, but. Yeah, they're just such cool forests. There's Camarostaphylus, and then there's, you know, it doesn't ever really freeze, but it stays cool and moist, you know, so. Mm-hmm. What was the habanera we saw yesterday? Fucking
Floribunda.
Orchid with a nectar spur, Floribunda? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. God damn, that was cool. A little past due, but it was still like it's weird the nectar spurs turn brown first.
Yeah, that was interesting, huh?
It's kind of cool, yeah. So they're done, they close up shop.
Yeah, close shop.
The fucking ovaries are already swollen. You know, you can tell they've been pollinated. Ardisia escalonioides, which is Primulaceae, which I had seen that genus in, once I saw the flowers, I remember seeing it in the Dominican Republic.
Oh, cool.
But how far north does that go?
Very far.
Right, that's like a tropical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, tropical.
Primrose family. Mm-hmm. Not evening primrose, but actual primrose. Ficus aurea.
Yeah.
That's nuts. I didn't know there was a native strangler fig.
Yeah, there's another one too. That's the fall. I can't remember what species it is. But yeah.
So there's two native species of ficus down here. Mm-hmm. Fucking nuts. And then Campylonurum phyllidetus, the bird's nest fern.
Oh, yeah. That's
how far north does that go?
Not very far.
These are like South Florida endemics.
That's why they're all still, you know, I'm not super familiar.
But you get Xanthoxylum in North Florida, right?
Not that species, no.
Really? Which one is it? Which one do you get?
I can't remember the species name, but let me look it up.
Aru. God, the leaves on that smell so good. But it blows me away because in Texas, we have that same species, but the leaves are so much smaller and it's got way more thorns. You can tell there's been more selection pressure for the herbivores in a drought-stricken environment. Trypsacum dactyloides.
We have the Xanthoxylum clava herculeus, the Hercules club.
Fucking, how does it look compared to this one?
I mean, it's not super common, and it does. It's very different looking, very different leaf structure.
What's the habitat
like? Pretty large tree.
Oh, really? It's a large tree?
I mean, compared to the ones that we've seen down here, I would say like I've probably seen them be like 20, 30, maybe feet, I guess. That's maybe 20 feet.
The shiny barked bastard we saw yesterday, that was Eugenia Mertesi.
I'm not, which shark? I thought shiny barked
remember
bastard.
Remember the one we were like, what is this thing? It's got weird, it almost
oh,
looked
no,
like an S and Becky.
That ended up being the Miracanthes, the...
what family is that? Mertesi?
Yeah, Mertesi. Simpson Stopper.
Simpson Stopper. These combat names are so silly, man.
But yeah, we have that Hercules Club further north that, and it has like the real big, you know, thorns on it.
There's a lot of Sapitaceae down here too.
Oh yeah,
a lot. Which is a family that's like totally tropical. You don't really get many northern latitude members of it. Chrysophyllum olivaform.
Yeah,
that russety, those russety abaxial beautiful. Leaf surfaces.
Beautiful.
And then it bleeds that
See,
white
that
milky
See, that should be
sap.
Planted more in
I know. That
landscapes.
Thing's fucking
That's
awesome.
So showy.
Just the leaves, too. What do the flowers look like on that?
I don't know. I've never seen the flowers.
Jesus Christ. Most Sapitaceae flowers seem to be pretty small. It was like panicles. But that thing was amazing. So many, man, there's a ton of Sapitaceae in New Caledonia, too. Like a ton of tropical. That famous plant that bleeds that blue sap, that nickel accumulator in New Caledonia, that's Sapitaceae.
Nice.
Glabrous up top, velvety on the underside. Where's the that's like a Caribbean tree. Chrysophyllum olivaformi. Oh, yeah, it's in Dominican Republic, too. Saw quite a few cool Sapitaceae in Dominican Republic. Oh, shit, I forgot to give you your tea, sorry. Chiococca alba.
Yeah, the chiococcas. I mean, they're super cool. I would like to know more about them, but yeah.
Rubiaceae, common name snowberry.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with Symphora carpos of Caprifoliaceae. Pityopsis. That was a weird.
I love the Pityopsis.
Do you get those in northern?
Oh yeah, we get a lot. Yeah,
not that same species though.
Yeah, really? Yeah. It's not as common. I mean, it's not common, but it does go further north. Yeah, that's like
so
one of the
stiff.
More southern ones. Yeah, there are some with even stiffer, thin, like hard almost leaves.
God, what that's got to be.
There are a lot of
adaptation
several of
them, to both dry and to being eaten. I would assume.
Yeah.
What a fucking cool habitat. And then just saw palmetto everywhere.
Yeah.
God, those are so cool.
They are.
Just creeping along the ground. You'll look, you know, the leaves are 10 feet away, but you look on the ground and the root is right there. But
they grow for thousands of years.
Those leaves were at one point where you were standing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The fucking plant is that old. It doesn't get taller than 3 feet.
Mm-hmm.
It just creeps along the ground. And that goes.
You know
up.
What's interesting too is down here, occasionally they do get taller. They form like an actual trunk.
Really?
Yeah, it's just some sort of weird adaptation.
But the population we saw today with
the
glaucous
leaves. Yeah,
that's the
majority of populations. There's one or two populations in North Florida I found with actual trunks, and I don't really know what causes that.
How tall did they get?
Like taller than me, like 5 feet or so.
Jesus.
Yeah, but it's just, I'm not sure. What spurs that type of growth?
But that's like
but it's
such
more common. When we were driving out there, I saw a few along the roadsides that were growing up like that.
But this population we saw today is the blue-leaved one, which is not that common. Most are just
the green. That's the silver form of Cyrano repens.
But it's not considered a variety. It's just this population.
As far as I know, it's just a form.
An allele or series of alleles, which seem to be dominant within this region, but adaptation to what, salt spray or more?
I don't know. I mean, they all are. I believe, from what I've heard, that it's slightly more common along the coast, so that would make sense that it's like salt.
Weird.
Yeah.
That was such a cool habitat, though. Fuck.
Yeah.
What do those things look like when they flower? How big are the inflorescences?
Pretty, maybe like 4 feet or so.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah.
Taller
I mean,
than the leaves?
4 feet off the ground. So I would say out of the plant, it's probably like 2-3 feet.
But they go up above the leaves.
Yeah.
Damn. And then we
saw... Great plant. I mean, important plant for pollinators.
We saw Lyonia fruticosa.
And yes.
What's up with that Exobasidium? That weird-ass fungus.
Oh, yeah. that's just a weird fungus that occurs on ericaceae. Some ericaceae. I see it on rhododendron in North Florida too.
But it's a fungus. It looks like it's mimicking leaves or flowers.
Yeah,
or what?
Yeah. It does seem to mimic a flower, essentially.
That's so fucking. God damn it. I guess to help to get insects to. Because there's a fungus that does that to brassicas out west.
That mimics really?
Flowers, yeah.
Interesting.
It turns like a bright yellow, like on draba or another brassica, but it's like the leaves of the plant are blue, and then when it flowers, it's yellow.
Yeah,
and
often
the fungus turns yellow, and it occurs at the distal ends of the shoots.
Often I've seen it be like a beautiful pinkish color, even.
Jesus.
Yeah.
I guess just getting insects to, you know, do its handiwork, spread the spores around. But it doesn't kill the plants.
No.
So it's a tolerated parasite. Mm-hmm. Like some sort of family member who moves in with you for a minute. A Semina reticulata, too.
A Semina reticulata.
That was fucking weird flowers.
Yeah.
One of the magnoliads. So a Semina, it's a pawpaw. It's the genus of pawpaws.
Yeah, we have several species and several endemic species in Florida, Central Florida especially.
God, they're such cool flowers. And they've got those weird glands that are innate to the petals. They're like glands or some sort of weird structure. Do you know what they do?
No, I don't know. I didn't know they had glands.
Yeah, I mean, look at the... they're like these weird protrusions. They almost look like calli you'd see on the orchid labellum, like weird little studs.
I think it's mostly like fly and beetle pollinated.
See those things, right?
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
What?
I just assumed that they were mimicking like... anthers or something trying to attract insects.
But do those flowers ever fully open, or that's just how they?
That's how they. Yeah, they're like.
So it's kind of like a Sarracenia flower.
Yeah,
it's basically getting them to go through, directing them through this opening between the perianth parts to get them to pick up.
And they have a unpleasant smell, like kind of vinegary,
really?
Stinky. Yeah.
That's so funny. Like calacanthus. Oh, you guys get calacanthus here too, right?
Up further north, yeah.
Further north.
I don't know how. I don't think it comes
down. Spice bush. Does it smell like port wine kind of? Like some old like.
It depends. I've found that they are variable between individuals. Some of them smell nice, like banana-y almost. Wow. And then some of them smell like not so great.
The one we used to get in California kind of smelled like old port wine.
Oh.
And this really.
Super familiar with old port wine, but.
Well, you know. If you ever hung out with any old alcoholics, okay, any old train bums or something.
Yeah, no, I think I'm...
Old hobos.
I'm bringing that up in my mind now. That's
North Bank Frith, the White Port Line. Hello, brother. I don't know. I guess it was... That was it, mostly. What else was... What else did we... Oh, fuck, yeah. What else did we see yesterday? We saw Tillandsia, Calocarpa... The giant cypress stump. I don't know, man. I mean, that's what's kind of bummed me out about this, is that we haven't gotten that much time.
Yeah, tomorrow we'll get to go out to the Everglades. If you want to talk about North Florida, I can pontificate for hours about North Florida.
We'll do a separate podcast about the North.
You got to come up.
I need to
North
come up.
Florida.
I'm going to fucking come out this time.
Will. Yeah. Maybe spring or if you can come up to do a terrain survey with me, you know, in this
like
this
April.
Early spring.
April would be good.
Would be nice.
Okay. Lily, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate this. Okay. All right. Maybe we'll do another one tomorrow if we see some good stuff. But all right. Thanks for listening. That's all I got. Bye. Have a good rest of the evening. Go fuck yourself. Bye.